All right, listeners, you're tuned in to the Nation's Blind Podcast. This is Anil Lewis, and I'm here with...
Melissa Riccobono. How are you?
I'm doing great. I still feel awkward opening. I think that you do a better job of it than
me. Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, either way, we still have an interesting podcast to get through.
We do.
This one's all about advocacy from legislative to community, and I think that we have a pretty entertaining and also educational podcast for our listeners.
Yeah, well, I think we try to do that every month, so hopefully this month is no different.
Well, there you go. We'll let our listeners be the judge.
Yes.
So we're talking about community advocacy, and you were talking earlier that you have a community advocacy event that you have scheduled coming up soon.
I do. I have become involved with Baltimoreans for Equal Education.
Baltimoreans.
And, yes.
I'm sorry. I've been in Baltimore for 8 years. That still makes me laugh.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it does. Well, at least it's not Baltimoreans.
Yeah, that's true.
Equal Education.
There you go.
But
Baltimoreans
the acronym
for
is,
Equal Education.
Yep. So the acronym is B, and they want people to, or we want people to be education voters and be involved with the education of students in Baltimore. And so we are working together. We're doing some canvassing to try to make sure that voters are aware of some issues in the upcoming election that impact education. We're trying to get voters to pledge to be education voters. Hmm. And then we're doing a lot of listening sessions to really figure out what it is that people in Baltimore care about and what they really want to see for our kids in an educational setting.
Cool.
And it's so exciting. The nicest thing was I was asked to join. I was invited on Facebook. And I mean, we talk a lot about that in the Federation, that a lot of people join because they were asked. And for me, that's been really true with this organization. I was sort of looking for a way to get involved. I mean, mm-hmm. education is a huge priority for me. I have three kids that are going
to
public
yeah.
schools.
I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly. and so it was just so nice to just be invited on Facebook by one of the kids' teachers, actually. And I was like, oh, well, there's a meeting coming up. Maybe I'll go check it out. I mean, she invited me. She must want me to come. She must think I have something to say and something mm-hmm. to share. And it's just been really nice to be involved. And I'm actually holding one of the listening sessions, co-hosting it with a friend of mine. So I'm just
awesome.
Very excited. It's been a really nice thing. And I've become more involved in the kids' school as well, the chair of the advocacy committee there. So it's been really nice. And
you're
I'm
the chair of the advocacy?
I am.
Look at that. I love
I am.
It.
I am.
Taking that learned Federation skill and integrating
yeah.
it into society.
Yes.
Good
yes.
for you.
Yeah. And it's been really exciting. So I'm looking forward to a great fall and a lot of new things on the horizon for myself.
I'm looking forward to hearing what comes out of this B meeting and this B effort.
So well, I hope good. You can come to the B meeting.
Well,
that'd be great.
Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah.
So that's a future success to happen. So we're talking about advocacy. Can you talk about maybe a past success you've had?
You know, thinking back, I think one of my things that I am most proud of is the work that we did in Maryland to pass a bill which created a task force that looked at standards for Braille. You know, students, we say students should be taught Braille. But what does that really look like? And that varies so much from teacher of blind students to teacher of blind students. Some of them say that kids, particularly kids with low vision, they can just know the alphabet.
Oh,
and
wow.
that's it. And then they don't use the alphabet, so they lose it. And then when they're adults or struggling in middle school or high school, they have to completely relearn everything. And so we thought we should have actual standards. And so I was on the task
idea.
Force. It was. So let me tell you about two things really quickly. So I actually, the bill signing for this bill, we got it passed. And I was very pregnant with Oriana, like probably a week from delivery, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very funny being at the Capitol, and we had to stand around a lot, and everybody just kept saying, are you all right? Are you all right? Are you sure you're all right? And I was fine. But then Oriana was born, and she happened to be a blind kid.
Look at that.
And I just thought,
oh, my
gosh.
Got that bill passed just in time.
And then I was on the Braille Task Force, and while I was on it and completing the work, I got pregnant with Elizabeth. And so by the time the Braille standards were done and passed and, you know, the task force work was done, I had two blind kids that were going to be impacted
by
these standards, by my work. And I was a part of that. And I'm still really proud of that. That's probably my moment.
I love the way that, you know, that book ends. But I think that you should be very careful about your legislative advocacy if you have to mark each milestone with the pregnancy. So
well,
just be careful.
And I'm done. Okay, I am no more pregnancies.
All right, that's a future podcast. All right, I'm glad that you shared that because I had the opportunity to share, you know, my moment, and President Kobono had the opportunity to share his moment on the presidential privilege.
So let's go to the presidential privilege. That sounds great.
This is Neil Lewis. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. I'm here with President Mark Riccobono for the presidential privilege. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. My privilege to be here.
Well, it's my privilege to be
here. Fancy new setup here in the studio. It's beautiful.
You know, we're stepping it up every day.
You
every
sound
day,
so much raise. Better than you look today.
I always sound better than I look. So we're talking about advocacy throughout this whole podcast. And I know we've had different discussions around advocacy, but maybe perhaps we can take advantage of this opportunity to talk more about local advocacy, the members and how they really get involved in just their day-to-day.
Yeah, the National Federation of the Blind as an organization, we bring together blind people from all of these local communities, and that gives us a very powerful nationwide network to work on systemic national policy and legislative issues. Mm-hmm. But where people oftentimes dig in is at the local level, working on mobilizing on the issues in their community. When I lived in Janesville, Wisconsin, we did some work on getting sidewalks, kind of controversial in a lot of small communities.
How are sidewalks controversial?
Well, typically the city does the work and the property owner pays for it.
Oh, got it.
And so those who are pedestrians are very interested in sidewalks, and those who are property owners are very uninterested in sidewalks. So it becomes interesting. And of course, in a case like that, it's not just for blind people. It's right. Actually a quality of life issue for a lot of people in the community. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity then to find some folks who are not blind who might be in concert with and agree with our point of view. And, that's a local issue that is ongoing, just like transportation in many communities. Our chapters are constantly working on questions around bus systems or taxi systems and having more access to public transportation, addressing problems. There's some ongoing things. And then, there are things that just kind of pop up, especially around how blind people are treated or portrayed in the community, that are really an advocacy opportunity. So, go ahead.
I wanted to offer, before you transition, the public transportation piece. I think that's really key. Because I think that so many decisions are made on behalf of blind individuals, anything from the accessible talking buses to the audible traffic signals. And just to be clear, we as an organization support the technology that allows us to move effectively, independently in our environment. But we like to be part of those decisions. So that's why that local advocacy is even more important.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of things that have been put in over the years in various places that just don't make sense for a variety of reasons, and that nobody asked our local chapter, and is a problem. But sometimes it also is an opportunity for us to create awareness about our local chapter.
Right.
As if people don't know about it, they don't know to ask either. So it's an opportunity for our members to get out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting advocacy piece is how we respond to how we're portrayed in the media and other realms. So a local advocacy item that I recall fondly was when I was president of the National Federation of the Blind of Wisconsin, and there was a election coming up for governor, and there were three candidates on one of the parties running for governor. And the opposing party ran this ad about the three blind mice.
Wow.
And, of course, the idea was that really using blindness in a way to say that these folks were stupid, they were naive, they were uninformed, they were unable to lead. And you might say, well, yeah, who cares? But some of our members felt like, well, this is insulting for the top potential political leader of the state to use blindness in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And we put out a press release basically saying, regardless of your political point of view, it's really not appropriate to position blindness in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice outreach for people losing vision, people who were blind, to say, you know, you don't have to think of blindness in this way, and you don't have to let other people talk about it in this way. It was also a nice tool to say to the politicians, you know, hey, we're paying
here.
Attention.
Yeah.
and we're going to vote.
And that was an evolution for me coming to the organization because, you know, being sighted and basically, to be honest, ignorant, you know, about a lot of the blindness aspects of it, I came in right around the time we were talking about the Mr. Magoo stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I grew up as a sighted kid watching Mr. Magoo, not really thinking about the impact that it had on blindness. But, you know, once I became a blind person, you know, that transition or that paradigm shift around the negative adverse, you know, effect or impact that those types of caricatures have on blind people was much more obvious. And I think that it is important for us to kind of convey those messages. And a lot of people will say, well, they didn't mean any harm by it. Well, whether they meant the harm or not, the harm is still there. So we have to make sure that we speak out.
Yeah. And Mr. Magoo is interesting, right? Because a lot of blind people grew up in a time where they experienced being called Mr. Magoo, which is part of why perpetuating it made a difference. Whereas, you know, we don't come out against every single portrayal of blindness. You know, a couple of years ago, there was the movie Don't Breathe that had this blind psychopath in it. I put it in the banquet speech, but other than that, no one even, the film did so horribly, I don't even know if anybody saw it. As opposed to, you know, the book Blindness that became a movie that had a lot of energy behind it. And so it was both an opportunity to educate, but also to say, you know, these messages just are not okay. And a lot of times these things start at the local level. Someone recognizes a problem. I mean, if you think about quiet cars, for example, you know, Debbie Stein in Chicago starts recognizing, wow, these hybrids, they're very quiet, and starts talking with other blind people about it in the local chapter. And in that case, it becomes an international issue because it has an impact on blind people everywhere. So it's those local advocacy opportunities that are really important and I think really critical in empowering blind people to have a voice in the local community.
And I love the example of the whole quiet car piece because that did start as a local issue that we ended up having to address on a national level. So that really speaks to the collective action of the National Federation of the Blind.
So what was your local advocacy moment?
Oh, man, my local advocacy moment was during the time we were passing the Help America Vote Act. And we were fighting against all of those people that said that the accessible voting machines that we were fighting for created security issues around voting. And just going to a national level, trying to get that to happen, and then being pushed back down to the local level by our senator at that time, really turned out to be a good thing because we developed a really good relationship with the Secretary of State's office, Kathy Cox, educated her about what we were trying to do. And she was able to integrate our messaging around accessibility to balance the whole security argument. And we, as a state in Georgia, were the first ones to have accessible voting machines in every polling place for the national and the local elections. So felt really good about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Leading the way.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people do not recognize how complicated advocacy is because depending on the issue, there's lots of people putting their voice in the mix for a variety of reasons. And if we're not in the mix, and sometimes if we're not very visible, pushing very hard, our issues just won't get noticed. You know, if you're dealing with schools, for example, you know, if you're just trying to turn out parents, it's not that it's easy, but you can turn out a lot of parents. If you're trying to turn out blind parents, the numbers aren't with you. So you got to get some friends, you know, in the National Federation of the Blind. So sometimes that's why we choose something that is viewed, I guess, a little bit more aggressive, like a protest or, you know, our protests are typically informational protests where we're trying to really raise awareness, not, you know, chain ourselves to voting machines or something. But that's one of the reasons we sometimes select these other tools or come out with a press release about something silly that politicians do, because those are tools that give us leverage that we might not have simply in numbers alone. And I think that's sometimes what gets people a little uncomfortable with our approach. They're comfortable writing a letter, maybe making a phone call, but doing something more outward and not so much. And sometimes I think that comes from how we've been conditioned as blind people to think of ourselves in society.
Interesting. I think the key of what you said, and I think it's core to what we do, is sometimes you just have to get out there and get some friends.
Yeah.
And that's what we do as an organization. So that advocacy piece that a lot of people see us, the role they see us in is, you know, litigants. That's when it's necessary.
Yeah.
But overall, our advocacy strength comes from us just getting out and getting some friends.
We better advocate for a coffee break before they cut us off.
That's right. Well, this is a different perspective on advocacy. Hopefully our listeners are taking this in. You have anything to offer before we go back to close out the podcast?
No, I got some advocacy work to do.
Excellent. Well, let's go build the National Federation of the Blind. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. Again, another presidential privilege for the history books. I still enjoy the conversations. It's interesting as long as we've known each other. I still find out new and interesting things about them in each and every conversation. So,
yeah, and it's nice that we had it at the beginning this time, you know, kind of changing things up a little bit, which is really nice. Really cool. You know, we have lots of interviews this time around, which is really exciting. We're excited to bring new voices to the Nation's Blind Podcast. And I had the privilege of interviewing Katie Ellis, who is a student in social work in New Mexico. And she is extremely involved in her community and just has a lot of nice advice to share with people about how they can be involved in their community as well. So should we listen to that?
Sounds like a great idea.
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast, and I'm here with Katie Ellis, and she's going to talk a little bit about ways that she is involved in her community. Hi, Katie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for being on the Nation's Blind Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So obviously our topic today is community involvement, and more to the point, not just community involvement, but ways that people who are blind are involved in their communities in other ways besides blindness organizations. And I've heard that you're very involved in your community. So I'd love you to tell the listeners just a little bit about what you're doing to be a part of your community.
Well, thank you so much. I am actually interning for Deming Public Schools right now. And I work with students who have a hard living situation. I help to make sure they have everything that they need to be successful in school. I also work with our state and county legislators to secure money for the county, for the town, for the state. I'm in touch with our governors who are running for election, our governors that are hoping to get elected. I am a part of the Homeless Coalition here in New Mexico. I am a part of the National Association of Social Workers here in New Mexico. And I also do a lot of advocacy work for everyone, because I believe that everyone should have the ability to be at their best potential, and that doesn't matter if you're blind or, you know, if you have 20/20 vision, you should have the ability to do anything you want to do.
Wow, that's a lot of community work. Congratulations on all that, and I'm just kind of wondering how you have time to eat and sleep and do all of the things that you need to do. That's great. Go ahead.
Honestly, don't know how I have the time to get sleep. My family has a joke that my free time is between midnight and 4 a.m.
Well, it sounds like it. It's great that you're involved in so many things. So obviously you're interning and you're also in the National Association of Social Workers. Are you going to school to pursue that kind of a career? Is that sort of what made you interested in that those two positions?
Yes. So I am actually studying for my master's in social work. I have my associate's in liberal studies and my bachelor's in social work. I graduated with honors in 2017. And when I graduate in December of 19, I will not only have my master's, but a graduate certificate in school social work education.
Wonderful. So. Wonderful. So obviously you believe a lot in social justice and making sure that people have are able to work up to their potential. I guess I'm just curious, how did you find these different opportunities to be so involved in your community?
I think it was because of my background growing up in a military and law enforcement family. We've always been taught in our family that you protect and serve your country. And, you know, being a blind person, you know, we're not highly looked upon to carry guns and whatnot and that kind of thing. So I was like, well, if I can't go into the military, because I also can't walk, so I can't, like, run the enemy around in circles. So I decided, well, if I can't join the military, then I can help protect our country here at home by making sure that laws and policies are created that are think about the people first and not the implications of what the politicians benefit from. The laws and policies need to benefit the people, not the politician.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What types of things would you say to other listeners of the Nation's Blind podcast who might be interested in getting involved, but maybe a little bit reluctant to take those first steps? Maybe they're worried about how other people will react or what kind of accommodations they might need as people who are blind, or maybe even that they'll try to volunteer somewhere and people will just think that they can't do whatever it is that they're trying to volunteer for. So do you have any advice?
My biggest piece of advice is don't let anybody tell you you can't do something. And, you know, one of the biggest things you can do is go to your school board meetings, go to your city council meetings, go to your county council meetings. Get involved as much as you can. And then when your state legislator is going on and you know that there's a piece of legislation that has to do with the blind or disabled community, go ahead and go up there and be like, look, I'm a person who has a challenge. I don't like to call them disabilities. I like to call them challenges because everybody has a challenge in life that at some point will be a major impact in their life. As is blind people, our blindness is always going to be a challenge, but it's not disabling us from doing something. So that's what I would recommend is, you know, be that thorn in people's side that says, well, here's that Katie girl who's rolling down the hall and who's got common sense and a good sense of being, and she knows what people need to make their lives better.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And I mean, I think that it's all about networking as well. Once you go to things, then you become known. And once you're known, then those opportunities can kind of occur somewhat naturally. So it's just kind of getting out there and doing it the first couple of times. And that's really good advice. Is there anything else that you'd like to share?
Well, you're going to be nervous as I'll get out the first time. Because when I first started getting into this, I was in second grade. In second grade in student council, and I've been doing this for 16 years now. And my goal is to become a United States Congresswoman or Senator. So just because I'm blind, it doesn't mean that I have to do something that's related to blindness. Anybody who is blind can do anything they want.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
You don't have to
true.
Put yourself in that box.
Definitely. No limits. No boxes.
No boxes.
Well, thank you so much, Katie. We really enjoyed talking with you, and good luck in all your advocacy work, and keep doing it. And I would love to see you as a congresswoman or a senator or maybe even president someday, if that's what you'd like to do.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Frankelbona.
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. Well, as I said in the interview with Katie, I truly don't know how she has time to eat or sleep or do anything else. She's so involved
very
in advocacy.
Very dynamic young lady.
Yeah, very dynamic. It was really fun. That interview was very fun. I have to say I love my job in the Nation's Blind Podcast because I get to talk to so many great people, and that just makes me very excited, and I hope our listeners enjoy it as much as I enjoy bringing it to them.
And I hope our listeners are paying attention and following the examples that many of these stories are setting. We need more and more people to be engaged in the community.
Absolutely, we do.
Yeah, I was talking to Chris a little during the podcast recording around a lot of different opportunities for us as an organization to engage around advocacy on a community level and membership engagement, et cetera. Just interesting to see how the Federation is really being involved in so many aspects of the lives of blind people in so many different diverse ways.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And you recorded that interview with Chris, I think.
I didn't do it, but Will did.
Well, yeah. But I don't think you were just talking to him. I think that we have a segment with Chris Danielson, haven't heard on the podcast for a little while. So it's really nice to have Chris back with us.
Yeah, it had been a while since we recorded together, and I enjoyed the conversation. And hopefully our listeners will, too.
Yeah, that
would
be great.
So let's take a listen. This is Anil Lewis, and I'm here with Chris Danielson, and you're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. So, Chris, it's good to see you again, man.
It's good to see you.
It's been a while since we kind of cohabitated this studio space.
Exactly. It has been a while, but I'm here because we have news.
Outstanding. Let's get right to it.
We have many news developments.
Yeah, we're talking a lot about advocacy, so I imagine the news pieces you have are around advocacy.
Well, yes, they are, as a matter of fact. So we do a lot of advocacy around various issues. We do a lot of advocacy around accessibility.
Yeah, I mean, that's the core of what we do. Advocacy is
the core of what we do. Right. So we do some advocacy around accessibility. Mm-hmm. And so we have recently engaged in some advocacy up in Massachusetts.
All right. What do we do in Massachusetts?
Well, in Massachusetts, we have filed a complaint with the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination. I like how they do that, by the way, right? It's the Commission Against Discrimination.
I love it.
They put it right out there. They don't say on discrimination or the Human Rights Commission or whatever.
Yeah, we're against it.
We're against it. Yeah. We're gonna put it right out there. Don't like it.
So what discrimination are they against?
Well, in the case of our complaint, we're hoping they're against inaccessible software in the workplace.
Oh, that's a great thing to be against.
There's a big company called Epic.
I remember Epic. We had a whole Epic fail campaign some time ago.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Epic makes software that is used in hospitals and other healthcare settings. Because their software is inaccessible, the blind people who are working in the healthcare industry, for example, as medical transcriptionists, are unable to do their jobs. Wow. And so Epic has not done anything about this, even though we had another suit up in Massachusetts again involving an employee who was actually affected by this. So we've brought a complaint to the MCAD, the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination, hoping that they will put some pressure on Epic to reform its policies. Because, hopefully if the state of Massachusetts says, guys, we're not going to let your stuff in our hospitals.
That's the way.
Yeah, exactly.
That's beautiful.
Right.
Hopefully that strategy will work. I know that Epic does a good job of creating, well, I heard some individuals use their apps that they say on the user side they're accessible.
On the patient side.
So they have the demonstrated ability to do it. It just makes no sense at all that they would not exercise the same degree of expertise to make sure the internal product so that blind people could actually work for the medical field as opposed to being beneficiaries of the work. So
right. We said, President Riccobono said in our press release, apparently Epic thinks that blind people can only be patients.
Yeah, wow.
Which apparently a lot of people think that sometimes.
Okay, so that's one. Let's get that out of the way. Hopefully we'll take care of that in short order.
Yes, better news.
I like better news.
Greyhound.
How do you get better news, Greyhound? Like, okay, let's see. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'll tell you how I get better news, Greyhound. Because Greyhound is going to make its new website and its new mobile app that it's building fully accessible.
Outstanding.
Yes.
All right. Congratulations to the dog.
And they are going to work with us to do this. They are also going to work with us to make sure that in the meantime, blind people who have trouble using their website or app and who have to call on the phone to book tickets do not get charged any fees.
Oh, the blind tax.
Right, the blind tax.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you have to tell them that you're blind and you have to tell them that you had trouble using their website.
Mm.
But if you do that, you should not have to pay the blind tax. And we are actually going to participate, the NFB, in a secret shopper program to make sure that this all works.
Excellent.
Like it's supposed to. So
we're going to have our members actually calling in just to check to see if they are doing exactly what we need them to do.
Exactly.
That's perfect.
Exactly.
And this is just an interim solution until the full accessibility, right?
Right, right. Okay. Which they are saying will be done within a year, less than a year.
Beautiful. So. Beautiful.
So anyway.
That is better news.
Yes, it is.
Do you have even better news?
I do. I do. I have news about, you know, we're talking about advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
And we can thank our Washington affiliate, particularly its president, Marcy Carpenter.
Yeah.
Right, for this even better news, because Marcy is a member of the Boeing Employees Credit Union.
Okay.
And Marcy discovered, to her dismay, that the website and mobile app of the Boeing Employees Credit Union, otherwise known as BECU, had become inaccessible. So she was unable to do her banking.
She was able to use it before. They made some changes, and now it's inaccessible.
Right, exactly.
Wow.
And so we needed them to make it accessible again. And so Marcy and some other members of the credit union got together and put some pressure on the credit union. And this is important. Without litigation.
Oh, that is important.
The credit union has agreed to make the website and mobile app accessible again.
Outstanding. Outstanding. This is a true example of collective action.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And our members getting engaged and creating systemic change.
You know, and it seems like in this case, Marcy's story really did have an impact because the credit union realized this is an actual member that we have done something that has made it impossible for her to do business with us. So we definitely want to fix that.
And I think it's important what you noted that it's not based on litigation, because I think a lot of people feel that's the Federation's default, that we want to sue individuals. And
right.
that's really not the case. We really do prefer developing collaborative, productive relationships with entities. But in some instances, we just have to bring that hammer down.
We
and,
do.
And you have an example of one of those that's recent.
Yes, we do. We have a person in California who we are assisting. Her name is Alina Sorling. Alina also worked in the healthcare industry. She worked as a food service technician for a large hospital system. And in particular, a place called Mercy Hospital in Redding, California.
Oh, interesting.
And she was a food service technician. She did various jobs relating to the preparation of food and the, you know, the selling of it in the hospital cafeteria and things like that. And she did this until she went blind. And when she became blind, after learning how to cope with that.
Right.
She
learned the alternative skills.
You know, learning the alternative skills, right. Getting her rehabilitation.
Good for her.
She went back to her, exactly. And she went back to her employer and she said, I know how I can continue to do my job.
Good.
And here are the accommodations I will need. And they
said,
so
they said, sure, come on aboard and we'll hire you right back.
Unfortunately, that is not what they did.
Wow.
Instead, they denied all the accommodations and then they discovered this vision requirement for her job, which they had never enforced before.
Wow.
Like, she had never had a vision test in all the time that she worked there, even when she was sighted.
Wow. And that in itself is discriminatory.
Right, right.
There's
exactly.
No vision required to work in food service.
Right. So now all of a sudden there's this vision requirement, and she doesn't. And since she doesn't meet it, they fired her.
Mm.
So, having denied all the accommodations that could have allowed her to do her job.
Wow.
So that's going to court. We're helping her take them to court.
And rightfully
so. That's just unacceptable.
Yeah. I mean, for those of you who are not aware, there's a business enterprise program around the country. We have blind individuals running full-fledged cafeterias all over the country.
All every day. Thousands of blind people in food service.
Yeah. Crazy.
So, So hopefully that will be successfully resolved as well. But it's important. I felt like it was an important story to bring up when we're talking about advocacy, because this is the kind of thing we do. We do fight for individuals. We fight for individuals so that change is made for them, and so that systemic change is
can
made
happen. That's correct.
So that other blind people will be included. So we're not going to countenance this type of employment discrimination, because it affects Ms. Sorling, but it also affects other blind people.
And yeah, it's a tremendous story that we can put out there, and we can leverage it to create systemic change in other areas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that it'll work out for the best, because I just believe in the power of the Federation.
I do, too. Yeah. I agree with you completely.
Well, thanks for sharing all these advocacy stories. Hopefully, it motivates others to be part of this process. And if you want to weigh in, contact the Nation's Blind Podcast with your comments. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. Again, as you see, we're just so involved in so many different areas, but I think the key important piece of it is it's our members that drive all of this.
It is, and our members that not only help drive it, but also help to tell us what it is that's wrong and give us ideas about things that we should work on fixing or making better. So I love that. I think that's one thing that we do extremely well, and we couldn't do that without our members who are involved on a grassroots level and or are just living the lives they want and run into things because they're living the lives they want, run into things in employment or when they're traveling or that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. So, the way we're able to engage on a grassroots level is what gives us our power. You know, a lot of people think that it all happens here in this city block here in Baltimore, Maryland, but that's just the center, you know, where all the information flows. But it's those 50,000 members across the country that are doing this every day just to make sure that they can live the lives they want, as you said. That's what makes the Federation so powerful.
Yes, it is. And, you know, John Perret and I had a chance to have a conversation, and he talks a lot about our legislative efforts, which, of course, are things that people think about when they think about the National Federation of the Blind. They often think that they might think about lawsuits and legislation, kind of the two L's.
But the legislative group, that's key to what I'm talking about. We have a dynamic legislative team.
Oh, we
do. But I tell people when they come through, the thing that gives us power is if the United States Congress introduced a bill that we didn't like, we have just as much difficulty as everyone else to get Congress to pass bills, but we can stop bills that we don't like because our legislative team can reach out to this network of members, and then within 24 hours, about 85% of the members of Congress have gotten a text or an email or a knock on the door sometimes from our members, letting them know how we feel about these issues.
Definitely. Yeah. And John talks about that in a really nice way and really clarifies that we are working on a lot of legislative issues, but we can't do it without our members.
Mm-hmm.
So should we take a listen to John's interview?
I'd like to do that.
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast, and I'm Melissa Riccobono, and I'm here with John Perret, and he is the Director of Advocacy and Policy. How are you, John?
Fantastic. Glad to be here.
Really glad to have you here. So the topic of this podcast is advocacy, and we are, of course, talking about all the different ways that the National Federation of the Blind advocates for all sorts of things and for all sorts of blind people around the country. And a big part of that, of course, is our legislative work. We recently had the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act passed, and that means that every quiet car needs to create a specific level of sound as it travels. And that, of course, makes it safe, not just for people that are blind, but also for bicyclists and other pedestrians. But I know that we've had other successes. What other things have we been working on that have passed recently?
Well, in the area of what we do for veterans, the National Defense Authorization Act was signed by the president into law on August 13th in a big ceremony that the president had at Fort Hood in upstate New York. And that bill has language that we've been advocating for that says that all veterans with a service-connected permanent disability rated as total will now be allowed to participate in the Space Available program. This is a program that allows now veterans and active military to fly on military aircraft. Frequently, these are just almost like passenger commercial planes where they're moving troops around the country, around the world, and frequently there are empty seats. And now we're able to honor veterans in the United States that have a service-connected permanent disability rated as total to participate in something that I think all of us at the National Federation of the Blind can be very proud of.
Wow, we've been working on this for several years, right? It seems like forever.
Yes, yes. And it's a demonstration of our persistence and the fact that we had good persuasive arguments, that we had a lot of other people that worked on this, other disability groups, other veteran groups that we helped organize and get passionate about this. And we stayed with it, and our persistence and our passion paid off, and we've got it done.
That's wonderful. And then the Marrakesh Treaty, there's been some movement on that as well recently, right?
Yes, yes. So we're a huge step was to get the Senate to pass what's called a resolution of advice and consent. That has happened. That has been passed on June 28th. And so now the next step will be for the actual president of the United States, or more likely his designee at the State Department, to sign the actual treaty and send it to Geneva. Will be put in a vault, and it will be recorded that the United States is party to the treaty. So that still has to happen, but that will probably happen in the next month or two. And coincident will be the passage of the law, which brings U.S. law into compliance. That law is referred to as the Marrakesh Implementation Act. That has also passed the Senate on the same day via unanimous consent, which is very exciting, again, in large part due to the tremendous advocacy of the National Federation of the Blind. And now we're waiting for we'll be advocating for the House to pass that, and then for the president to sign that into law. So there is still more to do, but there is a lot to be proud of that's already happened on the Senate side. All of the Senate work is now complete, and I think we should all look forward to finishing up the job on the House and with the State Department.
Wow, that's extremely exciting work. But, you know, we never rest in the National Federation of the Blind. I'm sure that we're not just applauding ourselves and sitting back and relaxing. We have other things going on. So what other legislative initiatives are we working on right now?
Well, one would be the Access Technology Affordability Act. A lot of times blind people, you know, in an effort to really succeed in their educational endeavors and their employment endeavors and living independent lives, you need to have a certain amount of technology, whether it's screen reading software or Braille embossers or refreshable Braille displays at home so that you can use it for education and employment purposes and maybe to help find a job. So we want to put more of that technology in the hands of blind people, and we came up with a good way to do that. One way to do that, to supplement the other ways that already exist, would be to have a refundable tax credit incorporated into the law. So we've been advocating for that. We have 10 co-sponsors in the House. We have 80 in the Senate, something to be very proud of. It shows that our members have been very active, and we're working to get even more support for this legislation and to try to get it enacted so we can get more technology in the hands of blind people to help in education and employment. Maybe to run in two more things. One, we're working hard on the Instructional Material in Higher Education Act. This would create a commission that would help establish guidelines for accessibility in college and higher education. Then we have legislation introduced in the House and the Senate, and we're working to build co-sponsor support for that. We're also working to try to increase or promote the accessibility of autonomous vehicles. Blind people do a pretty good job getting around as blind people and finding the independent ways to get wherever we need to be. But that doesn't mean we wouldn't benefit from more travel options. So one of the ways, if a new travel option that could be on the horizon for really everyone, but of which blind people will benefit particularly, would be autonomous vehicles. Autonomous vehicles are, there's a nomenclature determined by the Department of Transportation that says it's levels 1 through 5. Levels 4 and 5 specifically mean there's no possibility for the driver to take over. There's no steering wheel. There's no gas pedal. That's the ones that I'm most interested in as a blind person, and unless I'm sure you are too.
Yeah.
So that means that I can just hop in the car, and I'll somehow tell it where it needs to go.
Wow.
And and be able to monitor my progress and so forth. In fact, that's the part that we're saying we got to make sure that whatever you do to tell the car where to go, the directions, the destinations, the interim places that you might want to stop at, how you monitor your progress, how you find the car, get in and out, and then maybe park the car and find it when you want to go back, because cars might be able to just go park themselves. All that needs to be fully accessible to blind people. So we're working to make sure that's going to happen, and there'll probably be some kind of operator's license or a permit that you'll still need to get to sort of own and operate the car. And we want to make sure that that doesn't in any way discriminate against blind people. You won't need to be able to, quote, drive. As I said, these level 4 and 5, by definition, you sit in them, you don't drive them. So that is something that we're monitoring very careful. In fact, President Riccobono has met with the Secretary of Transportation. He's got an award from the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers. It's something that President Riccobono is doing an incredibly good job leading the NFB into this new transportation option, something very exciting.
That is very exciting. So obviously you're a staff member here at the National Federation of the Blind, but you can't do, and you have a great team. I should mention your team. You've got some great members of your team, but you can't do it all by yourself. What do members of the National Federation of the Blind do to help with these efforts? And what should members of the National Federation of the Blind continue to do to make sure that these advocacy efforts that we're still working on are able to move forward?
It's really valuable and important and critical that members of the NFB educate their various elected officials, whether it even going down at the local level, city council and mayors, up through your state and your governor. And then where I tend to put more focus here at the national level, kind of corresponding to the different levels of the NFB between chapters and affiliates and the national level, is to make sure that I get to know my member of Congress, my representative, my two senators, and educate them on what are the ways that would truly help improve the lives of blind people in terms of education and employment, living independent lives, focusing on civil rights, maybe some transportation. There's a lot of misunderstandings. I'm sure listeners know that you'll encounter a lot of misunderstandings when it comes to the subject of blindness. And it's up to us to meet and dispel those inaccuracies, teach people what would really help us and what really will improve our lives. And really, if we all are doing that together, when we all meet with our members and we all educate and tell our own personal stories, that's when we become so powerful, so effective, and we can really, really make some change that we can be proud of.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time, John, and I really hope that our advocacy work at the legislative national level continues to have a great deal of success.
Great. Melissa, thank you.
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. You know, I'd never sat down and interviewed John, and I really enjoyed that. John's a wonderful guy and a very important member of our team.
Such passion for the organization.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
If you ever have the chance to have John Perret tell you his story about how he joined the National Federation of the Blind, mm-hmm. he loves to tell that story. So,
he loves to tell all kinds of stories. He's a good storyteller.
He is a storyteller.
He emotes.
He has some very funny stories, too. Yeah. But he gets very emotional about talking with people about why he joined the National Federation of the Blind and truly what an impact our organization has had on his life. And so if you have the chance, talk to him about that. But what I really love about the interview with John is that it sort of brings us full circle. Everybody's been talking about all these interviews that we had, getting involved, that really the best way to impact change and to make change is to be out there.
And don't underestimate the impact that you can have.
That's right.
A lot of people think, well, no, I'm not a John Perret.
I'm just one person. Yes, definitely. Yeah. I'm just one person. But, you know, you can send emails. You can make a phone call.
And they all make a difference.
They do. They truly, truly do. Absolutely. So we've had some really nice notes from social media. We really appreciate that. Please keep them coming. I'd love to share those with you, Anil. You ready to hear them?
Oh, love to hear them.
So we have a message from Chris Westbrook, and Chris says, I'm on the board of my church, and I am involved in youth activities as well. I host a men's breakfast every month as part of my church.
That's awesome. And that's really where we need it in those faith communities, because so many instances we're greeted with, here, let me pray for you. Mm-hmm. And people don't recognize that we are also givers, not just the recipients of everybody else's goodwill. So I'm glad that he's active in that way.
Yeah, no, that is super important. Yeah, that could be a whole
episode.
I don't think we should, but you know, that could be a whole other podcast.
That'd be the Hallelujah podcast.
So, thank you for sidetracking me, Anil.
That's what I do.
It's very good. So, Taylor Arndt tweeted us, and Taylor says, because I live in a college town and am a university student, I am involved in a computer science club and also some disability network stuff, which I really love.
Beautiful. And I like peripheral. He's engaged overall.
Or she. I wasn't sure. Taylor could be a girl.
That's true.
And then we have a note from Emma Mitchell, and she says, I help my family with
Emma could be a guy. No, I'm kidding.
No, Emma's a girl. I know Emma Mitchell, actually. Okay. Just a bit. So Emma says, I help my family with their research and presentations when needed. And then she also said, I would like to be involved in a choir. So I hope that, Emma, if you're listening, I really hope you do that. I also would love to be involved in something musical. My schedule's so busy right now that I don't know how that would fit in. But I really hope that you can
You say something key. You got to find, balance your life with something that you like.
You do. Yeah. You do. Absolutely. And then last but certainly not least, we have Independence Science, and they say, we love doing accessible science activities for both blind and sighted children to make everyone aware of alternative techniques that are fun for everyone.
Right,
and
well,
I love that.
Dr. Cipollo, you're welcome for that that unsolicited
this was
testimonial.
Brought to you by Independent Science.
Yeah, but it's true, though. I mean, he's dedicated a lot of time and energy in making sure that those tools for science are accessible. So I commend him for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great thing. So we do want your feedback, and we do have a question.
You sound like you're trying to bring it to an end.
Oh, well, are you not ready to bring it to an end?
Is it time already?
I think it is time
already. Oh, wow.
I know.
Our listeners are so sad. But we'll
be
back
next month.
I'm sure
they are. We will be back next month.
Yeah.
Until then, though, can you ponder this question?
Ooh.
Because we really want to celebrate White Cane Awareness and Travel and Meet the Blind Month in October. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit. So you have a couple months to think about this question. We might have other questions that show up on social media before then. So be watching our Twitter feed at @NFB_voice. Look for us on Facebook. Just search for National Federation of the Blind. But here is the question that we really want you to answer. Tell us a story about the moment you realized what a powerful tool for independence your white cane is.
Oh, wow. That's a great question, because that wasn't the first that was my first experience with a white cane as far as it being empowering. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what people say, and I can't wait to talk about it.
Definitely. Yeah. So we do have other ways to leave us feedback. We can be emailed at podcast@nfb.org.
Mm-hmm. You can give us a call at 410-659-9314, extension 2444.
Yeah, we would love that, actually. You know, we've brought our listeners some voicemails from members. And so if you have a good story, a good white cane story, we'd love to have you put it on the voicemail so that your voice might be included in the Nation's Blind podcast.
Look at that. Well, we better be careful because they might be really good and we might lose our jobs.
That's true.
That'd be a good thing, though.
Yeah.
Sharing the work, that's fine.
Sharing the work is good.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Says, but I'm not giving up my spot.
That's,
I love that.
Kind of what I'm thinking because I really love what I'm doing.
That's beautiful. And we'll love it again next month.
We sure will.
We hope you guys have enjoyed listening to the Nation's Blind podcast. And remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.